So, I promised you a recap of balance of system, a lecture that we had in March, but it was given by a lecturer from the University of Dalarna in Sweden. And I promised you my recap of this chapter. So here we go, balance of systems, and this is part one. Basically, we'll talk about terminology, basic background that you need to know. The background of the students in this course is varied, so therefore I will go through this. Then it's a general overview of balance of systems. We'll go through mounting solutions, inverters, and other electrical components. So before we start real stuff, some terminology. Resistance describes the ability to reduce current. Capacitance is the ability of a body to store energy in an electric field. A material that has a large capacitance will hold more electrical charge at a given voltage than one with low capacitance. And any object that can be electrically charged exhibits capacitance. But the concept is particularly important for understanding the operation. So we have resistance, capacitance, and inductance, which describes the ability to store energy in a magnetic field. A conductor with varying current induces a varying magnetic field, which in turn induces an electromotive force. Inductance in a circuit is the analog of a mass in a mechanical system. And this, of course, leads us to the fundamental electronic components, which is resistor, inductor, and capacitor. We'll not use much of this directly, but it's a basic background to understand electrical components, which we will be talking about today. In addition to these, there's one more term that I would like to introduce you to, or to make sure that you know. In DC circuits, you only have kind of normal resistance. In AC circuits, the varying electric field will give rise to reactance in addition to normal resistance. Reactance is the opposition to a change in voltage due to capacitance, or in current due to inductance. And putting these two together, resistance and reactance, gives you impedance. So impedance is the measure of the opposition that the circuit presents to the flow of charge. And you should also be familiar with transformers. Transformers are most commonly used to increase low AC voltages, or that's a step-up transformer, or to decrease high AC voltages, that's a step-down transformer. The basic function of a transformer is described through Faraday's law of induction. And of course, what you do is to change the windings. So that was some terminology and basic background. We'll now get on with the general overview of the balance of systems. This lecture is about everything but the PV modules. So what does everything but the PV modules cost? This is an overview of the cost of the different components of a fairly large size PV system, just more than 100 kilowatts. And we see that the module costs is typically less than half of the total investment costs for the system. We also see this is from the technology roadmap, PV technology roadmap, trying to predict what will happen in the future. And what is predicted is that the overall price reduction for large ground-mounted PV systems predicted to be around 30% over the next 10 years. And these cost reductions are expected in all parts of the value chain, in the module, in the inverter, in the wiring, in the mounting, and in the actually cost of the ground. Module costs are expected to stay at approximately the same share of the total cost, and so are inverter costs and wiring costs. And it's also worth just noticing that they are actually similar today and expected to decrease at a similar rate. It's easy to think that the inverter is the big and expensive part of the system. The wiring costs are actually substantial also. As the balance of system costs is more than 50% of the total cost, this tells us that high PV efficiency is important, because it reduces all the balance of system costs associated with the installation. And just note that planning and soft costs are not included here in these numbers. And of course, this is one of the reasons why we keep pushing for higher efficiencies. It also means that easy installation and mounting is really important. Because as of today, working hours for the installation of plants is nearly equal to marketing, planning, ordering products, software installation, etc. So mounting is a big task, and it's important to make it as easy as possible to reduce the costs. And therefore, let's take a look at the different mounting systems there is. And there are many, because there are many different types of roofs and ground to mount on. Common for many mount systems is that each PV module is fastened by anchoring supports, be the red circle around these supports. And this is the case for very many, not all, but many mounting systems. Usually use aluminum or steel for the fastening of the modules. You also find that and as everything else, the amount of material needed to mount the modules has also been reduced over the past years. These are module clamps. A very typical way of fastening the modules. They can be used with many different fastening systems. This is from a commercial producer called VTech. Basically, I just think it was good images showing how their mounting system varies slightly depending on what kind of roofs they are mounting on. So you need solution for each type of roof. Often the clamps on the module are the same, while the way of fastening these clamps to the roof vary for the different type of roofs. You can also have more like rails where you click the modules into place, like this from K2 roof systems. And then you have the flat roofs. And one of the most important things to remember when you are installing on a flat roof is that there is wind. So looking at wind loads and what ballasts are needed to sustain these wind loads, that will be very important for flat roofs. Here is one example where they have visualized the ballast needed for each PV module mounted in a 15-degree tilt on a 22-meter high building. So at the corners, you need a lot of ballast. It's a lot of wind. That's needed 190 volts per 68 kilowatt areas around the edges and 33 in the inner circle, and then nothing, no extra ballast in the middle. Here are a couple of other systems with ballast, so you can see what it looks like. Alternatively, you can fasten the modules in the roof itself. Usually, due to the big forces, wind forces involved, there are very few roof, flat roof mounting systems that are configured for optimal tilts. Usually, they are 10, 15 degrees. Here are a few different examples from K2. Flat roof systems. In addition to wind, there is one other issue that leads to this type of configuration being preferred, and that's space. Because if you have a low inclination, a low tilt, then you can have the modules closer to each other. So each single module will produce less, but the total production from the roof will be higher because you can have the modules closer to one another without giving too much shadow. You may also have green roofs and PV together with the green roofs. Of course, green roofs are very popular these days as a climate action. You need to, there are larger amounts of rainfall, and in the cities, green roofs are one important way of dealing with larger amounts of rainfall. But this can be combined with PV. Of course, it's good that if the modules have a kind of a low height on the green roof, and place the PV module substantially above the vegetation, so you avoid shadowing. Okay, that was roof mounting. Then let's move on to power plants and mounting on PV power plants. fixed mounting systems keep the roof, the rows of modules at a fixed tilt angle while facing a fixed angle of orientation. Mounting structures will typically be fabricated from steel or aluminum, although there are also examples of systems based on wooden beams. Purchasing quality structures from reputable manufacturers is generally a low cost and low risk option. Some manufacturers also provide soil testing and qualification to certify designs for a specific project location. The mounting is not a big part of the expenses, but it's critical, so therefore buying from a reputable manufacturer is probably a valid choice. Also for PV power plants, you can have ballast, and then it's either concrete ballast that is cast in situ, so made on the site. This is most suited to small systems, and because it doesn't have a good economy of scale. Precast concrete ballasts, however, can have a fine, okay, economies of scale. It's specifically or particularly suitable at places where the ground is difficult to penetrate, naturally. It has a rather low tolerance to a sloping or uneven terrain, but it doesn't require any specialist skill for installation. Specialist skill for installation is needed for all of this, basically. So, and this is a very common way to do it. You drive some kind of pile into the ground, and that's where you fasten the modules. You have different kinds of piles. I will not talk a lot about each single one of these, but mainly they all require specialist skills and specialist machinery. So this is basically used for fairly large sites because you need access to this machinery. Here was one example of concrete ballasts. Again, this is from a specific product from K2 and with different heights of the modules. I would encourage you to have a look at this case here from Solar Power Online. The mounting systems that I've shown you so far have been fixed tilt. They are simpler, cheaper, and have lower maintenance requirements than tracking systems. Particularly in locations with high proportion of direct irradiance, single or dual axis tracking systems can be used to increase the average total annual irradiation. Trackers, of course, will follow the sun as it moves across the sky. These are generally the only moving parts employed in solar PV power plants. You can have either single axis trackers that alter the orientation or tilt only, while you also can have dual axis tracking systems that can alter both orientation and tilt. Dual axis tracking systems are able to face the sun more precisely all the time than the single axis systems, but they will also be much more complicated. And single-axis tracking systems are, at the moment, gaining popularity in commercial applications. And Scatec is a typical... Scatec is a typical tracking company. This is actually Next Tracker, showing how they have supplied smart solar tracker systems to more than 600 solar power plants on 5 continents. But I will encourage you to take a look at the Scatec website. We'll get back to that afterwards. So what does tracking do for the production? Tracking produces a smoother power output. You even it out over the day. This can help meet peak demands in the afternoon, which is a common problem in hot climates due to a lot of use of air conditioning. Below in the image, you see different curves. You see the broadest curve is the dual axis, the next dual axis tracking. The next is a single axis. And then you show two different systems, one facing just south, all the modules, and one facing east and west. You see on the east and west facing system, you have some modules facing east and some modules facing west, and this gives you this broader base down here. While the tracking systems are broader all over the place, basically. Is there any specific kind of modules that are deployed with the tracking system? It used to be crystalline silicon modules because they have the high efficiency and that reduced the additional capital and operating costs required for the tracking system per kilowatt peak installed. But relatively inexpensive single-axis tracking systems have recently been used with some thin-film modules, as the thin-film modules are also increasing in efficiency. From Photon International, well-known magazine, they summarized that there is 170 different devices for tracking. Generally, the simpler the construction, the lower the extra yield compared to a fixed system, and but also the lower the maintenance required. All trackers will have angular limits that vary amongst the products. And depending on these angular limits, this will affect the performance. Small break there. Also, what most tracking systems cannot take too great or too well is very high wind speeds. So if you get into wind speeds more than 16 to 20 meters per second, the system may need to go into storm mode, so stop, basically, stop tracking. So if you want to install a tracking system in a place with lots of high winds, this could reduce the energy yield significantly. Another thing to take into consideration is the ratio between direct and diffuse irradiation. Tracking systems will give greater benefits in locations that have a higher direct irradiation component, naturally, because that's what you're tracking. You're tracking the sun, that's the direct irradiation, while the diffuse irradiation will not benefit significantly from tracking. So, a few aspects to take into account when considering the use of tracking systems on the financial side is additional capital costs for the procurement and additional costs related to the installation of the tracking systems. Additional land area required to avoid shading compared to a free field fixed tilt system. And increased installation costs due to the need for large tracking systems that they actually may require other machinery and cranes to install. You will also have higher maintenance costs for tracking systems due to the fact that they have moving parts. On the operational side, tracking angles, all trackers have angular limits, which vary among the different product types. You would need to look into the high wind capability and storm mode, how high wind speed can they manage, and then it's the direct diffuse ratio. A single axis tracking system would in principle look something like this. You alter either orientation or tilt angle. Depending on the site and precise solar irradiation characteristics, trackers may increase the annual yield with up to 27-30% for single axis. Of course, you can have different types of single axis tracking systems, but the type shown here is the most common principle. Then you have the dual axis tracking system, and they are able to track the sun more precisely than a single axis tracking system. You see one variant here to the right. They alter both orientation and tilt angle, which means that they are basically able to face the sun all the time. So normal to the sun, almost all the time. Depending on the site and precise characteristics, again, of solar irradiance, they may increase annual energy yield up to 45% for this kind of dual axis trackers. But, and this one is from Sun Tactics. But as of today, it's the single axis trackers that are most commercially interesting. That was everything on the mounting side. In part two, I will talk about inverters. But that will be posted separately.